Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is presented by Iron Jock and Wisconsin.Golf's Shirts of Summer. There are two constants of a Wisconsin summer, heat and humidity. But now we can deal with the two H's with the initials I and J. That's Iron Jock, advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a process called silver ion technology. This technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this world-class antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. Join Iron Jock Nation and get yours at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. Along with Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez here. It is Open Championship Week this week. It is State Amateur Championship Week next week. And we've got a lot to cover here in our Talking.Golf podcast. First of all, Gary, welcome aboard. I don't know if you're like me. I have not set the alarm for 2 a.m. to get up and watch coverage live. But my gosh, it's on practically all day at the Open Championship at the home of golf at St. Andrews in Scotland.
Yeah, I spent a lot of the morning watching before we did this podcast, Rob, at 10:30 Central Time, and got to watch Tiger walk up the 18th hole. Man, that course is brown, isn't it? There's hard around the greens, it's green, but the rest of the course is baked solid brown, isn't it?
It sure is. I'm wondering if you've ever played a golf course that looks like what St. Andrews looks like this year. And of course, I think part of that is because, you know, they're trying to protect par, and as they just had an interview with Sahith Tagala, and he really embraces this because you can pretty much use any club in the bag for any shot that you need on this course. You could be 85 yards out and use a putter. That's my kind of golf, baby.
Yeah, well, I use my putter everywhere, or even off the tee sometimes, Rob. and I think you saw on the 18th hole when Tiger and Matt Fitzpatrick and Max Homa were all near the green, and they all hit very different shots. You know, Tiger kind of hit a bump and run, I think, and the other two putted it, but from different angles. But yeah, you're right. It's a chance for you to be very creative and use everything when close to the green, from a 5-iron up to a lofted wedge and a putter. So that's one of the charms, I think, of playing that golf course.
What's the brownest golf course you've ever played? And it wasn't as fast as it should have been for being brown.
You know, I'm trying to think. You know, I've played some brown courses. I've played in Scotland a little bit, and some of the courses there were pretty brown. Not as brown as what we're seeing on television with the old course, but I'm trying to think of a course around here that maybe wasn't watered back in the day. I can't think of one that really stands out, but I don't think I've ever played that one that was quite as brown as this one. How about you?
One I can remember Desert? Vividly was Lancaster Golf Course in Southwest Wisconsin. And now the home course to a couple of the prominent junior golfers, Noah Kirsch and his sister. And, their dad tells me that they now have a watering system in place in the fairways. But, you know, I mean, every July in Wisconsin, and we all have backyards, so we know what Mother Nature can throw at us when there's drought-like conditions. But I went there for the first time, and I don't remember really a blade of green grass outside of the greens. And so that would have been, in Wisconsin, the firmest and fastest. And then out in California, there was a course that I believe at least closed for a while, maybe reopened, Diamond Valley Golf Club in Hemet, and they had lost their well. And of course, you know, we've all heard about the water rationing and the water, you know, problems in California. They're very real. And when you are in an area where all of a sudden the water source that you have to water your golf course basically dries up and goes away, it really becomes an effort. And so the only thing that was green at that golf course was the only two things were the tee boxes and the greens, but the rest of it was pretty much dirt. And I remember taking both my sons out there one day and really kind of had to apologize because you had no idea. You know, you look at the reviews and they said, oh, it's, you know, it's really, you know, the fairways aren't very good. Well, that's an understatement when you lose your grass in the fairways. But obviously, yeah. Of course, they haven't lost any grass. It's just brown and it's firm and fast. And you know, you hear it, it's like, you know, playing on a runway. And I think a lot of these guys, you know, embrace it. It's, I mean, you could set up the old course any which way you wanted, I think, Gary. And these guys would show up in a heartbeat to play at the Home of Golf.
Yeah, it's one of those courses where if you built it today, Rob, in the middle of pick a state, you know, in the United States, no one would play it. Everyone would say it was ugly. But, you know, its location and its history in the middle of a, you know, the location in the middle of a medieval town, basically, where the entire region, really the country, but especially St. Andrews and the surrounding areas, just so focused on golf. Everybody plays golf. And then the history of all the people who have played there, everybody really who's anybody in golf history, except maybe Ben Hogan, who never got a chance to play the old course. He only played in one Open Championship, and that was Carnoustie, where he won. But yeah, everybody's played there. Everybody's walked over that Swilkin Bridge. I have a picture of myself on that bridge, Rob. I'm sure anyone who's ever been on that course has done that photo op. But yeah, that's what makes it special. And it is very, very strategic with the bunkering and the double greens and where they can put the pins. So they can make it very easy and they can make it extremely difficult for an open.
You talk about the history. We saw history here today, as you alluded to, as we record this podcast on a Friday. Tiger Woods, perhaps his last ever walk up 18 at the old course for an open championship. A real tough day yesterday, 6 over par and not much better today. What is your takeaway from Tiger's efforts to try to be relevant in this Open Championship? And what do you project the future will be going forward for him now that really, you know, we've for Tiger's purposes, we've cycled through the major championship season?
Yeah. You know, Rob, in the past few years, when he's had various injuries and back surgeries and before this latest one with the car crash, he made several comebacks, and I always said, don't count Tiger out. He's going to come back. Don't count him out. And sure enough, he would come back and do something special. This is the time, I think, where I can say, I don't think he comes back from this. I think the Tiger we saw this week at the British Open is the Tiger we're going to see from now on when he decides to enter tournaments, which are going to be very few and far between. It's going to be the majors and maybe a couple others. You know, I hate to say it, but I think we've seen, you know, the last of Tiger being able to win golf tournaments. That's my take. I don't know how you feel, but this is the one place I thought if he was going to be competitive, he would be here, and he just wasn't.
No, and I think he spoke to it, too. The one thing that the X factor in his preparation is the fact that there is no more tournament golf preparation. He's not playing you know, 3 PGA Tour events, taking a week off and then coming back for the Open Championship. He's played the Masters. He's, you know, tried to play and compete in the, you know, US Open PGA, but, you know, to come in here cold, literally competitively, it really just doesn't work for anybody. You thought that maybe the greatest golfer of our generation would be able to find a way. But I thought that this week kind of exposed that your point that it just isn't practical to think that he can do that, even as great as he is. I don't know what this means for the future. I think the one thing that we did see this week, though, is that his voice is every bit as important as his ability to swing a golf club. And I thought his comments on all things pertaining to golf, we'll talk about LIV Golf in a moment, but all things pertaining to golf is still valuable for the next generation of golfers to hear, because now all of a sudden they have options.
Yeah. You know, you're right, Rob. That's a very good point. His voice is very important. And I think he understands that it is, you know, early in his career, when he was hyper-focused on winning tournaments, he gave us very little of what was inside of him, really. You'd ask him questions, golf-related questions, about what he did on the third hole, and he'd go on a long spiel about, you know, how he played every shot. But when you asked him about something off the course, or, you know, something that might people might consider controversial. He was very buttoned down with and very careful and guarded with his responses. But I think we've seen him open up a great deal in recent months, and especially this week at the Open. I thought his press conferences and the way he answered some of those questions was very revealing of what's inside of him. And it was refreshing to see, I thought.
And I think it was critical that he was there this week, you know, for, you know, in addition to just trying to tee it up, but, you know, the Champions exhibition on Monday, where he was able to stop on the bridge on 18 and you know, all the photo ops, but especially the one with Nicklaus was great. I thought his interactions with Lee Trevino, I think those two guys could do a podcast, and I'd subscribe in a heartbeat. Yeah. I'd love to hear what they're talking about, because they really seem to enjoy each other's company. And I think finally now, after all these years, and I guess the hard part for you and me is that we were there when he turned professional back in 96. And now all of a sudden you're seeing the end of an era. And it just, to me, it feels like it went by in a heartbeat.
It does, Rob. Yeah, that's very well put. You know, he removed his cap when he finished his round today. And, you know, I don't have any hair, but Tiger's bald spot is really pronounced now. I mean, he's starting to look like a middle-aged man. I mean, from the neck down, he's still obviously, other than his leg, he's still great. I mean, he's still chiseled, and obviously he still works out and has maintained and has kept himself in great shape. But, you know, he's starting to look every bit as 46 years, I believe. He's 46 years old. Going to be 47, I think, in a few months here. So, it has gone fast. And boy, oh boy, did he treat us to some special, special, special golf along the way, didn't he?
Oh, and he's the reason we have all these great courses, you know, in the middle of nowhere, Wisconsin. We're going to Sand Valley next week. We'll talk about the state amateur in a little bit. But, you know, the popularity of the game and the reason for this imagination, ingenuity, entrepreneurship, you know, in all facets of golf, I think can be directly linked to his arrival, you know, in the professional ranks. And we'll be forever grateful for that. And, you know, again, I think we've talked about it before. I just hope that he entertains the idea of playing on the Champions Tour, because based on what we saw this week, I think he'll have a blast. And I think we saw that when he's there, everybody believes, and rightly so, that it's a more important, you know, deal. And I think 54 holes in a cart, you know, at, you know, the way John Daly does it. And there's a reason, you know, John Daly is not, I don't believe, you know, totally exempt for every tournament he tees it up in on the Champions Tour. He's the king of the sponsors exemptions, and, you know, Tiger will never need another exemption for the rest of his life. But, you know, I think on the Champions Tour, PGA Tour champions, I think it would elevate that back to where it was when Jack and Arnie and Gary Player played it. And not that it's not great now, great competition, but now all of a sudden you go back to that, you know, one of the greatest champions ever will be on the Champions Tour. That would be a nice bridge to cross when the time is right for Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I don't, you know, just he's playing a very, very limited schedule now, and I don't see him, you know, jumping into the PGA Tour Champions and playing 12 events, Rob. No. I don't think that's going to happen. I do think he would play the Senior Open because of his history in USGA championships and what it would mean to him to win, you know, basically everything, the junior amateur, the Open, and then the Senior Open. I think that would be a very special accomplishment. And I think in 4 years, when he turns 50, you know, he loves Steve Stricker, Rob. I wouldn't, you know, would that be the one regular season Champions Tour event he would play, would be the AmFam? I would think there's a chance that we'll see him in Madison someday. Maybe I'm dreaming. I don't know.
And I think a lot of it depends on the path that his son Charlie takes. And, you know, I think he's obviously, you know, created a situation where he and his family can do a lot of things that, you know, golfers in generations past maybe couldn't. You know, obviously he never has to play again, but, you know, this is the game that's identified him. It'll be fun to follow where he goes from here. Gary, as we look at the way this 150th Open Championship's unfolding, a lot of the dialogue early in the week about the impact of the LIV Golf Tour players in this event. Dustin Johnson, you know, has been a presence. Taylor Gooch has been a presence on the leaderboard. You know, Bryson DeChambeau. I'm not sure that Phil Mickelson's going to make another make the cut either. But Lee Westwood and Lee Westwood and Phil Mickelson very terse in their comments to the media after the opening round, which was the first availability of those guys. You know, we're going to have this these clashes as long as there is this concept of rival golf. What is your what are your impressions about the way that those two tours are interacting here? And right now, as we record this on a Friday morning, Cameron Smith is in the lead, the Australian, and a lot of talk about maybe Cameron being the next defector to LIV Golf because of his great friendship with Greg Norman. If that happens, and then there's talk of another top 10 player, our friends down in Illinois are floating that idea, American player, and a lot of people pointing the fingers towards Scottie Scheffler, but I think that one's a bit of a reach. I don't see that happening. I do see Cam Smith, but now all of a sudden we're looking at leaderboards, Gary, and trying to identify LIV Golf Tour players versus DP World Tour players versus PGA Tour players. It gets kind of exhausting after a while.
It is. It's a very muddled picture right now. And, you know, Dustin Johnson, who is probably right now the premier player on the LIV Tour, is, you know, got a really good chance to win this Open Championship. Be interesting to see the reaction of the, you know, the folks at the Royal and Ancient, who have, you know, Martin Slumbers and some of those people have spoken out about LIV, and they'd have their champion golfer of the year being a LIV player. It's a very muddled picture. And, you know, you do worry, Rob, about these guys who have pledged, remain loyal to the PGA Tour. As time goes on and they see the money those guys are making, at first, you know, they held their hands out and said, I'm not going over there. But when you see the money those guys are making, I think it's just really hard to maintain that. And I think one by one, some of these guys are going to be picked off. And I personally hope that, you know, the guys who have remained steadfast in the PGA Tour's corner, I hope they stay. But it wouldn't shock me if one by one they started to leave.
Yeah, I think the two big keys, Gary, one, you know, being the format of the LIV Tour, if they were to change that back to championship golf, and if their hand is pushed by the official world golf ranking and the ultimate decision that the powers that be with the OWGR, you know, dictate as to whether LIV Golf Series events will qualify, I think that'll be a huge component. If, you know, if they can go over there and make tons of money and use that as that kind of annuity that, you know, will never be matched. I mean, that there's no way that anybody, I wouldn't think, can financially front a golf tour that has that much money behind it. I think there's still the specter of it being an exhibition because it's 54 holes with shotgun starts, and I don't know, are they all using carts? I don't know if the cart thing's as big a deal as the shotguns and the lack of a final round, but there were a 72 hole event. But it really, to me, this week feels like golf has been more vulnerable than maybe we've seen to this point in the whole LIV Golf versus the world type of discussion at the other majors.
Yeah, you're right, Rob. The world ranking points, that's going to be a critical component to this going forward, because those guys would then be able to maintain their world, their standing, the world ranking, and be able to play in the major championships, which award, you know, top 50 in the world, get in all the majors right now. So, that's going to be critical. I think at some point, you know, the LIV Tour, obviously it's going to grow, I think, to 14 events next year, and I've heard possibly 20 after that in some future years. So these guys are employees now who go over to LIV Tour. They have to do what the LIV Tour wants them to do. And, you know, all the talk about being independent contractors, someday these guys might be finding themselves having to play, you know, 18 or 20 events. They can't pick and choose like they can on the PGA Tour. So there's all that stuff, Rob. It's how the Masters is going to handle this, the whole thing. It's there's so many question marks still, but you're right. This is going to be an ongoing topic now, and it's not going away anytime soon.
Yeah, and interesting too that Martin Slumbers talked about, you know, they're not going to ban anybody from the Open Championship, but they will review their exemption policies, which is always code for,
yeah,
if we don't like who's falling in those, we'll get rid of them. I thought also to put right. a conversation, it was telling too that Europe's favorite son, Ian Poulter, got a few cat calls from the crowd when he was introduced before the opening round. And I never thought I'd see the day where Ian Poulter got booed on European soil.
That probably shocked him a little bit. But, you know, what do you expect? There are a lot of people out there who just don't like the whole idea of this tour and some of the things that the players have said about it and some of the things they've said about other tours that they've played on that helped them get where they are. So he should probably expect a couple cat calls.
I could see it if we're the fake Poulter from Twitter, our friend, the fake Poulter, but not the real one. We'll see where this goes from here. Talking.golf presented by Iron Jock and Wisconsin.golf's Shirts of Summer. If you think the heat's on those guys playing on the LIV Tour, yeah, maybe they should think about wearing an Iron Jock performance gear polo like Gary and I will be wearing next week at the Wisconsin State Amateur. Iron Jock infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel it manufactures through a process called silver ion technology. That technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. If you want to learn more and be a part of Iron Jock Nation, get over to ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. Gary, we talk or we shift our conversation from talking about the greed of professional golf to a story that I wrote and posted yesterday from the Wisconsin State Senior Match Play Championship at Stevens Point Country Club. Mitch Bowers of Mineral Point edges JT Johnson, a Monona native who graduated high school in Sparta, now lives in Minnesota, but maintains a handicap at New Richmond Golf Club and a membership and likes to play in the WSGA events as much as he does the ones in Minnesota. Before they teed off yesterday in the championship match at Stevens Point, Gary, I've never heard of this before, but I think it's a great idea. They agreed to divide in half the $575, thanks to Thomas Fazio for getting me that number, in pro shop earnings that they had coming. They were the last two survivors in the 32-man bracket. That's how much pro shop merch they were going to get. And they simply did that so they could focus on playing for a trophy. I felt like I opened a door and a swoosh of fresh air came in. I thought that was the best thing I've written in about 8 months. That was really cool.
Yeah. So they guarantee that the guy who finishes second is going to get as much pro shop credit as the guy who wins the event. And they obviously had an equal chance of finishing first and second. So, you know, that purse sharing and splitting, that's been done before, Rob. That was done years and years ago on the PGA Tour. I know Arnold Palmer did it like in exhibitions and obviously frowned upon by the tours. I mean, you can't, right. When you get an official event, you can't split, you know, the first and second guys can't collude and say, we'll agree to add our money together and split it in half. It's been done before. I haven't heard that it being done in a long, long time. So that I was really found that interesting to read in your story, Rob, but that guarantees that takes a little bit of pressure off, but I think you still want to win the trophy, don't you?
Well, you want to win absolutely. You want to win the trophy. But I think you also, you know, as you're out there wondering, you know, and I don't know, especially, you know, golfers that we cover that are in position to, you know, make $300 that here, $500 there in the pro shop. I mean, after a while that can get pretty exhausting trying to figure out how many Pro V1s you want in your garage, but, you know, but I thought it, to me, it was a symbolic gesture of two great sports. And, you know, I don't know JT Johnson and Mitch Bowers well. I've known them for a long time. JT was, he won the mixed team championship senior division that I played in up in Minnesota 2 weeks ago. And I got to see him and Lee Classy, the two winners there, who both have dual interests in Minnesota and Wisconsin golf. Lee lives up in Cumberland during the summer. And as I mentioned, JT, you know, with a membership at New Richmond. And they really enjoy coming over here to play, but they also have some great events that they play over there. And I think by virtue of JT's finish in the state senior open a few months ago, I think he's exempt for the state am. So he'll be playing their state am, I believe, next week. And then Mitch Bowers out of Mineral Point, a longtime club champion down at Dodge Point Country Club. And I know there was a great buzz going through the club yesterday after word of his victory got through there. you know, when you come from a small town and a small club and you go up and win a state event, that stuff gets noticed. And I don't know what it was like on a Thursday night at Dodge Point, I don't believe Mitch Bowers would have been buying many beers in the clubhouse when he got back to Mineral Point. And I think that's cool. And you know, it's good to see. And I think that's why our, you know, the WSJ events are just so popular right now, is because we've got great people running them. We've got tremendous people playing in them, both competitively and as people. And I think the time that you do invest in playing in these events is worth it. And I thought that was great. And again, you know, it was great competition. I think I didn't put it in the story. Both golfers said it wasn't always great golf. In fact, I think JT Johnson characterized it as you might call it a pillow fight, but it did have. I mean, Mitch Bowers holed out from, you know, 130 yards for eagle on a par four, as JT Johnson was out in the fairway with a chance to, you know, make birdie. And you know, so there was at least, and then, you know, Mitch won it with a birdie on the last hole. So I think that at that point, you know, you say, hey, you know, in match play, it doesn't get any better than going down to the final hole with a chance to win.
Yeah, that's the beauty of match play, Rob. You don't always have to have your best stuff. If the other guy doesn't have his best stuff, then it becomes, I love that saying, a pillow fight. But you don't always have to have your great stuff. You just have to have a little more stuff than the other guy in match play. And so you can shoot, you know, 65s, a stroke play score and lose, and you can shoot 75 in a stroke play score and win in match play. So that's what makes match play so exciting, is it's mano a mano. And I, you know, guys often will play their game in accordance with how their opponent is playing. If a guy hits a bad shot, you suddenly switch gears and go into more conservative mode. And if your opponent hits a great shot, it puts pressure on you to follow. So I love match play, and I wish there was more of it, Rob, especially on the PGA Tour. Maybe we'll see more match play going forward on the PGA Tour as they, you know, change some of the things in response to what Liv is doing.
Yeah, I think that would be great. It was fun stuff yesterday. The other big event this week you got to cover over at West Bend Country Club, stroke play event, women's state amateur. And for a while, it looked like Emily Lauterbach out of Heartland was going to run away with it, but it wasn't a runaway victory, but it was a pretty decisive victory nonetheless. And Emily Lauterbach right now is as good as it gets in women's golf in Wisconsin. She now holds the Women's State Open and Women's State Amateur Championships concurrently. And it must have been pretty impressive what you saw over at West Bend the other day.
It was, Robin. What impressed me most is Emily didn't have her best stuff in the final round. Her wedge game wasn't very sharp. She admitted as much. She had a couple of pretty poor wedge shots, but she's a gamer, Rob, and her putter was just incredible. I thought the key to the whole final round was on 7 and 8 when she missed greens and didn't hit great shots into the greens after that, but then made two long bombs, a 30-footer on 7 and a 20-footer on 8 to save par. And that was huge because Mia Seaman birdied number 7. So instead of picking up 3 shots, had Emily missed those 2 putts, she only picked up 1. And I thought that was the key to the whole round there, Rob, was Emily's putter was just, she putted magnificently. She didn't, another thing that impressed me about really all the women that I watched, but especially Emily, is that she's long, Rob. There was a 290-yard par 4, and she hit her drive into the right greenside bunker. So she carried it, you know, 285 in the air, which is as long as a lot of guys hit it. So, yeah, very impressed the way she didn't have her A stuff, but she still won very comfortably. And Mia Seaman, you know, was 10 shots down at one point, and 3 holes later was 5 shots down, gave it a good run. And I enjoyed watching her play and Grace Suter, who they finished 1, 2, 3. So it was a great week and a good week for Emily.
Yeah, and as we talked about, a real deep field this year of women in championship flight, and just kind of a renewed buzz about the women's events now that they're under the WSJ umbrella, a little bit easier to register and schedule. And I think that'll be the way it is going forward. There's one big event left on the women's schedule. That's the Brown Deer, the Badger Mutual Insurance Women's Amateur at the end of the month at Brown Deer. And then there's a little bit of a gap, Gary, which is why last year Emily Lauterbach filled that gap, or at least part of it, between the end of the state events and the start of the college season at the University of Wisconsin by playing in the what is now the Epson Tour LPGA Tour qualifying school out in Palm Springs, and didn't get through, almost made the cut for the final round, but gained valuable experience in the heat and in the both competition and the weather out there. And I think that's kind of, you know, made her a better golfer because she sees what's on the horizon. We've, you know, seen Tatum Beck out of Waterford turn professional, and Bobby Stricker, who went through the Epson Tour qualifying last year. I anticipate that once Mia Siemens done with her final year of eligibility, now that she's transferred from South Dakota State to Lipscomb, that we'll see her give it a shot. They all have the opportunity, but I really thought maybe the difference right now between Emily Lauterbach and the others is the fact that, you know, she kind of has a pretty clear focus as to what it takes to get to that next step after college. I don't know whether she'll have exercise another year of eligibility after the one coming up, because I think she's got that. But for sure, she'll be playing this year for the Badgers. And I just feel she's a more well-rounded golfer than even a year ago. And she was pretty good a year ago because she was in the hunt for the State Am title, losing in a playoff to Bobby Stricker. So I think the sky's the limit for that young lady.
Yeah, I agree, Rob. And she told me she is going to play in the Epson Tour, LPGA Tour qualifier again this year. So even more experience going against golfers who are a little older and a little more seasoned than her, and who are pursuing their professional dreams. So she, you're right. She gets to see that up close. And, you know, she's getting close to the point where she's going to get through one of these qualifiers one of these years, Rob. The Badgers are going to have a good number one player this year, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of state amateurs, we save the future for the end of the podcast here. It's the big one. It is the 121st, I believe, Wisconsin State Amateur up at Sand Valley, unique format this year. We will be posting the field breakdown that I did later today. But Gary, in doing that breakdown, again, I'm really struck by the depth of the field. We don't have defending champion Pearson Hunt in the field. Five other guys, I guess it is, have turned professional since a year ago at Westmore. Matt Tolan, Harrison Ott, Hunter Eichhorn, Thomas Longbella, and Nate Thompson out of Greendale. So that's six really big names, but yet we've got a really great field of guys that could win this thing, highlighted by, I feel, Cameron Huss, Bennett Swavely, Jacob Beckman from the college ranks. And then you look at guys like Jack Schultz, Adam Garski, and that's just the tip of the iceberg, because you've got some, really good, junior golfers. Mason Schmidtke, won the Ray Fisher tournament, last month. And, you've got Adam Miller, who, reigning WSGA men's player of the year. And of course, a caddy at Sand Valley. I can't wait to see how this unfolds. What's your initial excitement as you look back or look forward to our week next week at Sand Valley?
Yeah, Rob, the initial excitement is just exactly what you talked about, is all these good young players mixed in with a couple of good mid-amateurs and guys who are near mid-amateur status. Adam Garski's really been playing well this year, Rob, and Jack Schultz, too, made a great run in the Ray Fisher to finish tied for second behind Mason Schmidtke. And one of the caddies, you know, I haven't contacted Jack about this, but I see it in your notes there. Yeah, one of the caddies told me that at Aaron Hills the other day, told me that Jack played the two Sand Valley courses, Mammoth Dunes and Sand Valley, in a bunch under par. So we're going to have to get that verified. But I think Mammoth Dunes is going to be, could be a birdie fest, Rob. I think it's... for the big hitters, they're going to be able to get down near a lot of those greens and the huge greens. I think we're going to see a lot of birdies there. And then I think things tighten up a little bit on the Sand Valley course. So I can't wait. I can't wait to see what the scores are on these courses, because we've talked about them and heard about them and have known about them for years now, several years. But we haven't seen the best players in the state, what they do on these courses. So I can't wait to see what kind of scores these guys put up.
And we know now a little bit more about the format with the historic two-course employment of both Sand Valley and Mammoth Dunes for the first two rounds. Everybody will play Sand Valley on Monday, according to the the WSGA website. And then everybody will play Mammoth Dunes on Tuesday. Everybody off number one both of those days. And then they'll cut to the low 70 in ties and return to the original Sand Valley Championship layout for the balance of the tournament on Wednesday and Thursday. Gary, what do you think about that setup? And I mean, it's kind of like the Open Championship here. It starts at 7 a.m. and I think the last tee time is about 3 in the afternoon. It's a lot of golf, but there's also a lot of daylight this time of year. I like the format. I'm not sure what you think.
Oh, yeah, I love it. You know, this might be the first time the state amateur has gone to two courses, right, in the initial two rounds, the first two rounds, I believe it is.
Yep.
You know, the state Open has done it a few times. But, I think it's a cool format. And these guys who haven't played Sand Valley, they want to play both courses because, you know, we've heard so much about them over the last few years. I'm looking forward to seeing what they how they handle these courses. They're similar in ways, Rob, because obviously they're the same pieces of, you know, it's the same piece of ground. But, you know, Coore Crenshaw, they did the original Sand Valley, and then David McClay Kidd was the architect for Mammoth Dunes, and they have sort of different contrasting styles. Mammoth Dunes is wide open, Rob. I mean, the fairways are literally 150 yards wide in places. So I think Mammoth, these guys are going to unleash drivers, and we're going to see some preposterously long drives on Mammoth Dunes, Rob.
I'm looking forward to it. Field breakdown that we're posting later today, I go qualifying site by qualifying site. You know, Gary, the way the WSGA sets up every event that it stages, the cream usually rises, and that was certainly the case. Among the qualifying site winners, we have Bennett Swavely of Hudson. He's going to be a sophomore at the University of Minnesota. And then we have Jacob Beckman, who made 8 birdies in a bogey-free 64 at the Legend at Bergamot to win that event by 6 shots. And the other one that jumped out, Ty Kretz, not an outlandishly low score, 170 at Northbrook Golf and Grill up in Luxembourg, Sponge's place. But the fact that he won it and beat a pretty good field, I thought out of all the, and I want to get your take on that particular qualifying site, because Ty Kretz wins it with a 170 over Jason Jahnke, who is a Jahnke out of Keewaskum, who is now qualified 7 times over the last 9 years. And which, you know, he's one of these, you know, career amateur type guys who always winds up in the field for the state am, but he tied with Blake Wisdom out of Bucknell in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. And Blake's had some great rounds of golf already this summer. So that tells me that it was a very competitive field. But then your guy, Cody Getzky, who finished 7th out of 10 golfers in the boys 14 to 15 division at the National Drive Chip and Putt. You know, we kind of sometimes look at drive, chip, and putt as a hit and giggle and just kind of getting these kids involved in a competitive side of golf. And all of a sudden, the kids in the state am. I thought that was the kind of the coolest qualifying site. And then it was wrapped up. Austin Theis of Sheboygan Falls, who was much like Adam Garski, who won the National Club College Club Golf title last fall. He was T14 playing for the University of Wisconsin. And that, to me, it shows the great diversity we have here in the qualifiers for the state am.
Yeah, I love that you can catch fire in a qualifier and get into the state am, as some of these guys do every year. And Cody Getzky, I don't know. I'm not sure he's had his 15th birthday yet, Rob. He probably has, because he was 14, I think, during the Masters, but. He might be the youngest guy in the field. I'm not sure. We'll have to do some research on that, but it'd be close.
We will. And one of the great irritants in doing this year, Gary, was the fact that the Blue Golf platform, WSGA and the WPGA use, when you click through to their actual Blue Golf profile, not the one that's through the association, until this point, they always had their current age listed, and they've taken that off. I'll have to ask Jeff why that happened, but they're going to be getting a lot of questions and texts from us saying, how old is this guy? How old is this kid? You know, and because that was, I tell you what, that was the best thing I ever saw, because, you know, ever since I started covering golf, I think you're the same way. You know, one of the stories is, how old are these men and women that are, you know, doing well? And what do they do for a living that allows them to be good amateur golfers? And now we've lost our little vat of ages. But yeah, I don't think he's turned 15, and he will be one of the younger kids in the field. But there's a lot of great, you know, high school golfers in there. I thought it was interesting too with the you know, we got a really good cross section of winners in these qualifiers. You talk about high school golfers. Michael Addy just graduated from Hamilton High School in Sussex. He's going to Parkland College in Champaign, Illinois, a two-year school, hoping to perhaps get noticed by a Division I and get some of his, I think, you know, general classes taken care of. He won down at Janesville Riverside the day after the Ray Fisher, and Mason Schmidtke, who became the first high school golfer to win the Ray Fisher, I think he was a little bit winded because he had to survive a bogey finish in a 6-for-2 playoff to earn the last berth available there. And that was, again, another competitive field. You have three Badger golfers, Graham Moody out of Vancouver, Washington, Ryan Smith out of Etonen, Georgia, and Clayton Tribe of Madison also qualified out of there. And Michael Addy and Aiden Cudney, two of the really good high school golfers, were 1-2. As I scroll down the other site, Spencer Stuckey out of Delafield and Kettle Moraine High School won the qualifier down at the NAG in Pewaukee. And Will Schlitz, who led Eau Claire Memorial to the state team championship and was the Division I state individual champion last month at Black Wolf Run, he won the qualifier up at Antigo Bass Lake. And then you had one more down here. No, that those were the high school kids that won it. A couple other guys, though, that I wanted to talk about as qualifying site medalists. I ran into Charlie Malecki at the state high school tournament. He vowed that he was rededicating himself to golf this year. He got to the finals of the state four ball with Robbie Morway, his former Mequon Homestead teammate. And then he goes out and wins the qualifier at Oakwood Park in Franklin with a 68. Gary, I would, you know, Charlie Malecki almost won the state am when it was up at North Shore Menasha a few years ago. Wouldn't that be a story? The resurgence of Charlie Malecki, the former Marquette golfer.
That would be a heck of a story, Robin. I'm going through your list here from all the qualifying sites, and there's so many names here that you could pick out and say, what a great story that would be. We haven't mentioned Dennis Watson yet, have we?
No, Dennis Watson jumped off the page there, and I kept asking, yeah. And I finally I shot him a text yesterday, and yeah. Dennis Watson, for those who remember, you know, the golfer by that name, finished runner up to Andy North at the 1985 U.S. Open, had a great PGA Tour career, I think won once on the PGA Tour Champions, and Dennis Watson with one N wins the qualifier at the Lakes Course up at Lake Arrowhead. And lists his town of residence as East Troy. Well, he's actually a 20-year-old rising sophomore at Saddleback College in Mission Viejo, California. Qualified earlier this year for the Southern Cal Open, but didn't start playing golf until he was 17. He is Dennis Watson's son, and Dennis Watson, the family's been in Florida, California, I believe. Dennis Watson, senior, now married to a prominent attorney in the Chicago area. And so they have a couple of different places that they call home. But Dennis Watson Jr., the 20-year-old, is living in East Troy this summer. Great place to live in the summertime and playing at, he says, Geneva National. WSJ has him playing out of Grand Geneva. So I'm gonna go with what young Dennis said. But he helped Saddleback College qualify for the California Community College Athletic Association State Tournament this past spring for the first time since 2008. He qualified, as I said, for the Southern Cal Open in May, missed the cut after shooting 76-74. But if this guy, you know, picked up the game of golf at 17 and he's shooting 76-74 in the Southern Cal Open, Gary D'Amato, he's a force to be reckoned with, in my opinion.
That's pretty impressive. Did he tell you why he's in East Troy, Rob? Why is he spending the summer in Wisconsin? Is it because he just wanted to get north of the state line and play WSJ?
I guess, you know, everybody from Illinois is coming across, although Lafferty out of Marquette decided this year that he was going to he's going to play in the Illinois Stadium. And in talking to JT Johnson after the state senior match play yesterday, apparently some of these guys are accusing the associations of collusion because Illinois, Wisconsin, and Minnesota all have their state AMs on the same week. And so if you want to try to double up, I don't know if you can in Wisconsin. I think there's that rule that if you play in another state AM, you can't play in ours. I think that cost a Minnesota golfer in the state women's match play a couple of years ago. But yeah, I mean, so I don't know. We'll have to find out more when we see him at Sand Valley. But I just think that it's great that, everybody seems to be discovering the game. Everybody seems to be playing at a high level. Again, we defy the ages. Mike Murphy out of Madison now lives up in Minocqua. For the third year in a row, qualifies for the state AM. He's now 66. Third year in a row, he's been in the state AM 8 times in the last 9 years at the age of 66. And Mike Murphy is the Dick Clark of amateur golf in Wisconsin. He's ageless. And I know he wasn't happy with the way he performed last year at Westmore, and wanted to make that cut, and really felt challenged a few years back at Milwaukee Country Club. But boy, it's fun to see the vast difference. So that what, 66 years old, and I think they're Jim Dewey. I'm not sure if he's older than that or not. Eddie Zerbic didn't quite make it, but then you've got Kevin Cahill in the field, I believe. So you've got guys on that end of the spectrum, and then you've got Cody Getzky at that 14, maybe 15 year old side of the spectrum. It's really where golf careers come to mix and mingle.
Yeah, and I think these could be really good courses for Bob Gregorski, Rob. I think he's play. I have a feeling he'll play very well on the original Sand Valley course, and then see if he can keep up with the big hitters on the Mammoth Dunes course. We didn't mention. I don't think we mentioned that Tony Romo has a special exemption. Rob, do we know for sure that Tony's showing up because he's played a lot of golf and his back is sometimes can be pretty iffy, but he's in the field as of now, isn't he?
He is. And it's amazing. They've got the alternate list on the WSJ site. And so far, only two guys have withdrawn. And one of them happened just in the last 48 hours. Zach Seifert, who finished second to Jacob Beckman at the qualifier at the Legend at Bergamot. He is withdrawn. But there's another story coming. I think we'll have something in Sweet Spot on Monday. The Badger assistant coach to Mike Wilson resigned last week to take a job as an assistant coach for the University of Mississippi women's program. I'm sure that he is now getting ready to take that next step in his coaching career. So you can't fault him for that. But so far, Gary, I only two WDs that have required alternates to enter the field, which is far fewer than a year ago at this time at Westmore. I think that's pretty telling. There's a lot of people that want to see what Sand Valley is all about.
Oh, no doubt. And, I've been there. Have you, I haven't talked to you, Rob, about this. Have you ever seen the Sand Valley courses yet?
I have never set foot on the property.
Okay. Well, you're in for a treat. And, I've seen them and played them. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how players much better than me play these courses. And I'm looking forward to seeing the growth at this place. I mean, there's two courses under construction right now, Rob. The Lido, the private club, which is right across the street from the main resort. And then Tom Doak, who is, in charge of the Lido, the architecture of that, is also building Sage Valley, another course that is going to open in a couple years there. So, there's a tennis complex going up and a pool complex and lodging and all this golf. It is a massive, massive place, Rob. And we're going to have a lot of fun there this next week.
Yeah, we sure are. And as someone who grew up 25 minutes up the road, I have a hard time visualizing this. I know that because of Sand Valley, they had to extend the runway at my little airport where I grew up in Wisconsin Rapids at Alexander Field to accommodate some of the air travel that's coming in of golfers for that. But, clearly this is, everybody goes there, raves about it. They rave about the caddies. And I think the caddies will be an interesting component to this stadium. I know that I believe I saw something from Sand Valley that said that, their caddies can be used for this tournament. And, those that aren't competing in it, like Adam Miller and Sam Cienciola. But I think that could be, very critical because, first of all, Gary, it's going to be hard to get to know two courses, and you don't want to throw away your one round at Mammoth Dunes just because that's the outlier. You and I have played Aaron Hills, Whistling Straits, and you've played Sand Valley with caddies. they have to be an invaluable resource to try to get to know the land and the tendencies of that course being as new as it is very quickly.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the caddies who are playing, who are in the field are going to, especially Adam Miller, probably will have a huge advantage. And Rob, one thing we have to do, and you're going to have to do this, is when we get there, Rob, the first thing we need to do is go to Craig's Porch, named after Craig Halton, who found the land that became the Sand Valley Resort. There's a little concession stand on the first tee on a little knob they call the volcano overlooking the first tee on Sand Valley. And we have to have one of the ice cream sandwiches there. That is an absolute must. So we'll go. That's the first thing we do before we
wait a
and
second.
We're going to go back for more.
One of those things where one's going to lead to two, and before the end of the week, we have a scoreboard up in the clubhouse. What's going on?
Oh,
you're leading me down a bad road. Are ice cream sandwiches? You're come on now, really?
Yeah, yep. And they come in many flavors, Rob. So you're going to have to try them all. So we'll spend a lot of time and money at Craig's Porch. I guarantee that.
Well, and the other thing that'll be fun, because of the location, you know, we weren't sure what availability of lodging would be at the course, so we got a Verbo not far away. Not only is this a great golf area, but it's also a great recreation and relaxation area, and we'll be right in the middle of Sand Valley and Lake Peatonwell. It's just a great area of the state for you know, everything that is great about Wisconsin summers, in my opinion.
It is, Rob. You know, Adams County was one of the, if not the most depressed counties in the state before the Kaisers came along and worked their magic. And now it is, the land is highly desirable and property values have gone up and real estate is really hot in that area. And it just goes to show what golf can do, what a great golf resort can do for the surrounding area. The restaurants, hotels are going up. I mean, everything's happening around that area. And that county was in pretty sad shape about 4 or 5 years ago.
All right, before we call it a podcast, Gary, let's go top three at the stadium. Who's your trifecta?
Oh, wow. I like Adam Miller. I like the, first of all, what a fine player he is. And then secondly, the local course knowledge that he has there. I think he might be the guy to beat. I like Cameron Huss, who's had a great summer, Rob. He's played very, very well all summer. And it's getting better and better and better. And let's see, a third, let's go with the kid, Mason Schmidtke, who is coming off a victory in the Ray Fisher and has all the tools, I think, to be a really, really good player. Or is already, and he's going to get better. How about you?
I like all of those picks. I'm going to go, I just don't think we're ready to jump off the collegiate bandwagon, but if we do, I think it'll be with Jack Schultz. I don't know if I can pick Jack Schultz to win it on the record, but I'm going to put him in the middle between Cameron Huss and Jacob Beckman. I think, as you said, Cameron Huss is playing exceptionally well. I feel he's kind of got the, just got done with 72 holes, an amateur championship out in Colorado. And I think that he's kind of, maybe – in that mold of a Pearson Hunt, Harrison Ott, and the Thomas Longbella, Matt Tolan, and I think he needs to win one at some point. He's got the tools to win one. I think it happens this year, it'll be close because I think the way Jack Schultz is making birdies, Gary, not just in this practice round we've heard about, but I know at the Match Play Championship over at Lasonia. I mean, he was pouring them in from everywhere, and I think he's gonna win one of these, and then Jacob Beckman really seems to have a chip on his shoulder. Mike Wilson, the Badger men's golf coach, sent a message when he brought in Clayton Tribue and I believe 2 to 3 other transfers on top of the 2 to 3 incoming freshman recruits. It's gonna be game on this fall for the Badgers. There's gonna be a lot of competition with 12, 13, or 14 guys on the roster. And Jacob Beckman went out and won qualifying for the U.S. Junior. He won qualifying for this, and he's been very emphatic, playing well. I don't know whether he'll be there for all four rounds. I think it might be a situation like Cam Huss last year at Westmore, where he's maybe in the final group or the second to last group going into the final day, and maybe can't quite seal the deal. But I think he'll be there, and I think it'll be riveting. I and again, I you make those picks, Gary, and Adam Garski has played played well last year on a really tough course at Westmore, and is just a guy who is going to be around. And and if he's around long enough to make a run at the end, he could you know, muscle his way in. I think there's probably a good 10 to 12 golfers, Gary, that could win this thing, because we don't have a Pearson Hunt who would be the rabbit, you know, making a ton of birdies and getting out there and winning by six. I just don't see that happening. I think whoever wins this State Am, I think it's going to be tight. I could be wrong, but I think it's going to be one of the better start to finish State Ams that we've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah. And to your point, Rob, I doubt that there's going to be a surprise winner. I doubt there's going to be someone that don't talk about and some we don't expect who jumps up and wins this thing. I think it's going to, you know, the winner, I like your number of 10 to 12. I would go maybe a little deeper, maybe 15 to 16 guys could win this. And there are, all of them are going to be names that we're very familiar with, I think.
Well, we shall see. Gary, I fly in bright and early Monday morning, actually late Sunday night. I'm praying for no delays in that, but you'll scoop me up from the hotel by the airport in Milwaukee and off we go to Sand Valley. We'll meet Jim Kels up at the course and have a wonderful summer week in central Wisconsin. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too, Rob. The weather looks great. 80s, high 70s to mid 80s, and looks like sun all week. So bring your sunscreen and your Wisconsin.golf floppy hat,
Rob. I will absolutely do that. Gary, appreciate it. We'll find a time to talk golf again next week. Maybe on the ride back to Milwaukee after the State Am, we'll have to record it in the car. But we will talk golf again next week.
All right, Rob. Looking forward to next week with you. Thanks.
All right, Talking.Golf presented by Iron Jock and Wisconsin Shirts of Summer. There are two constants of Wisconsin summer: heat and humidity. But now we can deal with the two H's. With the two letters that come right after that, I and J, that's Iron Jock. Iron Jock is advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a process called silver ion technology. This technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this world-class antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. Join Iron Jock Nation and get yours at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.